Hi everyone, welcome back to the MedBullets Step 2 and 3 podcast. In today's episode, we cover the topic of renal cell carcinoma found under the oncology section at medbullets.com. Let's begin with a clinical snapshot. A 65-year-old man presents to his physician's office after noticing blood in his urine earlier this morning. This has never happened before, and he denies any new medications or prior infection. He also reports to having flank pain for the past few weeks. Medical history is significant for hypertension. He has a 40-pack year smoking history. On exam, there is a firm, non-tender, and homogeneous mass in the right flank. CT of the abdomen demonstrates a heterogeneous mass in the left kidney. Let's continue with an introduction to renal cell carcinoma. Clinically, it is defined as renal malignancy originating from the proximal renal tubular epithelium. In terms of the epidemiology, remember that this represents 2-3% of all adult cancers, and it accounts for about 85% of adult renal cancers. Clear cell carcinoma is the most common type, and other subtypes include papillary carcinoma, chromophobe carcinoma, and collecting duct carcinoma. Demographically, it is more common in men with the mean age of onset of around 60 years of age. Risk factors include tobacco smoking, which is the most significant, as well as obesity, hypertension, genetic factors, and acquired cystic renal disease. In terms of the pathogenesis, there may be structural alterations in the short arm of chromosome 3, which can result in sporadic or hereditary renal cell carcinoma in certain subtypes, such as clear cell. Conditions that are associated include von Hippel-Lindau, tuberous sclerosis, paraneoplastic syndromes, hereditary papillary renal carcinoma, and familial renal oncocytoma. Moving on to the presentation, symptoms will include hematuria, which occurs when the tumor invades the collecting system, as well as flank pain. On exam, one may note a palpable abdominal renal mass, and the mass is typically found to be firm, non-tender, and homogeneous. One may also note scrotal varicoceles. Remember that varicoceles do not empty with recumbency in this situation. There may also be involvement of the inferior vena cava, which can result in lower extremity edema, ascites, pulmonary emboli, and hepatic dysfunction. In terms of further imaging, a CT scan is indicated as an essential initial radiographic test for evaluation of renal cell carcinoma. It is also indicated for an accurate assessment of the extent of local and regional involvement, and patients must be evaluated for metastasis prior to surgery. The specific modality involves a CT scan of the abdomen and pelvis before and after contrast administration. Specific findings may include enhancing lesions with contrast and thickened irregular walls or septa. In terms of further studies, histology is indicated to make a tissue diagnosis of renal cell carcinoma. With regards to the differential, make sure to think about benign kidney tumors such as angiomyolipoma, as well as urothelial carcinoma and lymphoma. In terms of treatment, medical options include systemic therapy, which is indicated in patients with unresectable disease, such as metastasis and locally advanced disease. The specific modalities may include immunotherapy, such as interactions with interleukin-2. Surgical options include partial or radical nephrectomy. This is considered definitive therapy in patients with localized renal cell carcinoma, and partial versus radical nephrectomy is dependent on a number of factors. Complications related to renal cell carcinoma include paraneoplastic syndromes, which may result in hypercalcemia, secondary to parathyroid hormone-related peptide, hypertension, secondary to increased renin levels, and erythrocytosis, which may be secondary to increased erythropoietin levels. And lastly, with regards to prognosis, there is a poor prognosis as the anatomic extent of the disease worsens, with increased tumor grade, poor performance status, with paraneoplastic syndrome, and with obesity. Now that we've discussed the major points relating to renal cell carcinoma, let's walk through some questions to apply what we've learned and get a sense of how the topic might be tested. For the first question, consider the following clinical scenario. A 66-year-old man presents to the emergency department with red-tinged urine for the past 3 days. He denies fever, chills, pain with urination, or urinary urgency. His past medical history includes hypertension, hyperlipidemia, chronic obstructive pulmonary disease, and diabetes. His medications include amlodipine, atorvastatin, tiotropium, and metformin. He currently smokes one pack of cigarettes per day and has a 50-pack year history. The patient's temperature is 99.3 degrees Fahrenheit, or 37.4 degrees Celsius. Blood pressure is 136 over 88, pulse is 80 beats per minute, and respirations are 16 breaths per minute. Physical exam reveals a thin-appearing man with bitemporal wasting. There is no costovertebral angle tenderness or palpable abdominal masses. A contrast-enhanced abdominal computed tomography scan demonstrates a heterogeneously enhancing 6.3-centimeter by 5.6-centimeter mass at the upper pole of the right kidney with thick septa. Which of the following additional findings is most likely to be observed with his condition? And the answer choices are: Choice 1, eyelid droop. Choice 2, flushing and diarrhea. Choice 3, hypercalcemia. Choice 4, hyponatremia. Or choice 5, multiple hepatic cysts. The best answer to this question is choice 3, hypercalcemia. The presentation of macroscopic hematuria in a smoker with a heterogeneous hypervascular renal mass is suggestive of renal cell carcinoma. Humoral hypercalcemia of malignancy is the most common paraneoplastic syndrome in RCC, presenting with hypercalcemia and affecting up to 20% of patients. Hypercalcemia of malignancy is a paraneoplastic syndrome caused by the secretion of parathyroid hormone-related peptide from the tumor. PTHRP shares some homology with endogenous parathyroid hormone and thus binds the same receptor to cause increased bone resorption, leading to hypercalcemia and reduced reabsorption of phosphate by proximal tubule cells in the kidney. It is commonly observed in squamous cell carcinoma of the lung and RCC. Serum calcium levels greater than 13 should prompt consideration of malignant sources, since such high levels are rare in primary hyperparathyroidism. Asymptomatic mild, such as albumin-corrected calcium of less than 12, or moderate, which is albumin-corrected calcium between 12 and 14, hypercalcemia, do not require immediate treatment other than avoiding aggravating factors, such as thiazide diuretics. Treatment of symptomatic or severe hypercalcemia consists of isotonic saline, calcitonin, and bisphosphonates. Other paraneoplastic syndromes seen with RCC include hypertension due to hyperrenanism, polycythemia from ectopic production of erythropoietin, Cushing's syndrome due to the production of ACTH, and dysglycemia due to ectopic secretion of glucagon or insulin. Let's also discuss why the other choices are incorrect. Choice 1. Eyelid droop is a finding in myasthenia gravis or Lambert-Eaton syndrome. Myasthenia gravis presents with ocular and or bulbar symptoms. LES presents with progressive proximal weakness, and patients can have ocular symptoms as well, but bulbar findings are less common. The paraneoplastic process involved in MG is acetylcholine receptor antibodies, and the paraneoplastic process in LES is antibodies against presynaptic calcium channels. These are associated with thymomas and small cell carcinomas of the lung, respectively. Choice 2. Flushing and diarrhea are often observed in carcinoid syndrome, which is caused by neuroendocrine tumors of the gastrointestinal tract that is metastasized to the liver. Flushing and diarrhea are uncommon in non-metastatic GI neuroendocrine tumors because of first-pass hepatic clearance. Choice 4. Hyponatremia can be caused by the syndrome of inappropriate antidiuretic hormone, which is a paraneoplastic syndrome commonly seen in patients with small cell carcinoma of the lung. Severe cases of SIADH presents with symptoms of severe hyponatremia, including nausea, vomiting, seizures, or coma. Workup shows hypotonic euvolemic hyponatremia with elevated urine sodium and osmolality. Choice 5. Multiple hepatic cysts are associated with autosomal dominant polycystic kidney disease. Patients classically have a family history of ADPKD, and CT scan shows thin-walled, rounded structures indicative of simple cysts. A heterogeneously enhancing mass with thick septa should raise suspicion for an alternative diagnosis. Finally, a bullet summary. Humoral hypercalcemia of malignancy is a paraneoplastic syndrome commonly encountered with renal cell carcinoma, and it is driven by tumor production of the parathyroid hormone-related peptide. For the second question, consider the following clinical scenario. A 53-year-old male presents to your office for abdominal discomfort. The patient states he first noticed pain on his right flank several months ago, and it has been gradually getting worse. For the past week, he has also noticed blood in his urine. Prior to this episode, he has been healthy and does not take any medications. The patient denies fever, chills, and dysuria. He has a 40-pack-year smoking history. Vital signs are a temperature of 37 degrees Celsius, blood pressure of 140 over 90, heart rate of 84 beats per minute, respiratory rate of 14 breaths per minute, and oxygen saturation of 98%. Physical exam is unremarkable. CBC reveals a hemoglobin of 17 and hematocrit of 51%, and a urine analysis is positive for red blood cells and negative for leukocytes. Which of the following is the most likely diagnosis? And the answer choices are: Choice 1, renal cell carcinoma. Choice 2, polycystic kidney disease. Choice 3, abdominal aortic aneurysm. Choice 4, pyelonephritis. Or choice 5, renal oncocytoma. The best answer to this question is choice 1, renal cell carcinoma. Given the patient's presentation, which includes flank pain and hematuria, and his history of smoking, the most likely diagnosis is renal cell carcinoma. Renal cell carcinoma most commonly presents with a combination of hematuria and abdominal mass and flank discomfort, although many patients are asymptomatic and are diagnosed incidentally. Patients may also have an elevated hematocrit from elevated erythropoietin production. Risk factors for renal cell carcinoma include smoking, hypertension, obesity, acquired cystic kidney disease, and genetic factors such as von Hippel-Lindau. The publication by Higgins and Fitzgerald discusses the differential diagnosis of renal and adrenal masses. They broadly categorize renal masses as cysts, tumors, or inflammatory lesions, and suggest ultrasound and/or abdominal CT with contrast as an initial diagnostic step. The publication by Cohen and McGovern reviews the diagnosis and management of renal cell carcinoma. They suggest that the standard of care has traditionally involved radical nephrectomy, although small tumors may be treated with partial nephrectomy. They also mention recent investigation into percutaneous ablative approaches, which may require further trials to determine its appropriate use and management. Let's also discuss why the other choices are incorrect. Choice 2. Polycystic kidney disease typically presents with bilateral complaints. Choice 3. Abdominal aortic aneurysm is less likely, as the complaint appears to be renal in nature. Choice 4. The patient does not have evidence of infection. Choice 5. Renal oncocytoma is much less common than renal cell carcinoma and is a benign tumor. That's all for this review about renal cell carcinoma. We hope that was helpful. This is the MedBullets Step 2 and 3 podcast, a daily audio review session for MedBullets, the free learning and collaboration community for medical student education. As a reminder, you can follow along with these podcast episodes by reviewing the topics directly on MedBullets.com. You can listen to these episodes on the MedBullets website or phone app while reading through the topic. If the MedBullets podcast has been valuable to you, we'd be thrilled if you consider leaving us a 5-star rating and writing us a review on Apple Podcasts. It will help us spread the word and increase our discoverability tremendously. Thanks for tuning in. We'll see you all tomorrow, right here, on the MedBullets Step 2 and 3 podcast.